you for joining us for live paranormal radio. From the paranormal to the unexplained, it all happens here.
It all happens here.
Looking to enhance your radio experience? Participate in our live video chat 24/7 with our live paranormal radio show host and other like-minded people. Live. Paranormal.com, the only interactive social chat room supported by Full Interaction Media. Stop by now and join the fun.
Stop by now and join the fun.
Hi, this is Dana Workman from Haunted Highway on Sci-Fi, and you're listening to the Ghost Host, Sophia Temporelli, on LiveParanormal.com. Boom.
This is Bill Murphy of Sci-Fi Channel's Fact or Fake Paranormal Files, and you're listening to the Ghost Host, Sophia Temporelli, on LiveParanormal.com.
This is Christopher Sanders with My Ghost Story on Biography. You are listening to The Ghost Host with Sophia Temporelli on LiveParanormal.com.
And Michael Perry.
And we're here. Hello. We're here at The Ghost Host with Sophia Temporelli and weekly.
LiveParanormal.com.
Weekly. Weekly at LiveParanormal.com.
Hey everybody, this is Rex Williams, the medic from Destination Truth, and you're listening to the Ghost Host, Sophia, on LiveParanormal.com.
This is Stefan Brigatti from Pacific Coast Paranormal, and you're listening to the Ghost Host, Sophia Temporelli, on LiveParanormal.com. She rocks!
This is True TV's haunting evidence investigator, Patrick Burns.
And ghost huntress author, Marley Gibson.
And you're listening to Ghost Host. Sophia Temporelli.
Hi, this is Professor Lloyd Auerbach, parapsychologist, and you're listening to The Ghost Host with Sophia Temporelli on LiveParanormal.com.
This is author Alexandra Holzer, and you're listening to Ghost Host Sophia Temporelli.
Hi, this is Jeff Belanger, host of 30 Odd Minutes, founder of GhostVillage.com, and author of lots of your favorite paranormal books, and you're listening to the Ghost Host, Sophia, on LiveParanormal.com. Boo!
This is Nick Groff, executive producer of Ghost Adventures, the original documentary in Ghost Adventures, season 1 through 10, and executive producer of Ghost Stalkers, author of Chasing Spirits, the building of the Ghost Adventures crew, and founder of NickGroffTours.com. You are listening to the Ghost Host, Sophia Temporelli, on LiveParanormal.com. Tune in.
Hey, this is Zach Bagans from Ghost Adventures, and you are listening to the Ghost Host, Sophia Temporelli, on LiveParanormal.com.
Celebrating her 9th anniversary as the Ghost Host, it's Sophia Temporelli right here on LiveParanormal.com.
The Ghost Host.
That's right, it's the Ghost Host Show with Sophia Temporelli on LiveParanormal.com. This is hands down the world's most unique paranormal broadcast where 21-year-old Sophia Temporelli discusses all the latest hot topics with all the paranormal field experts themselves, and today is no exception. So congratulations, Sophia, on over 9 years of broadcasting here on Live Paranormal. Thank you, Rob Sarek, the site founder of Live Paranormal, for providing this format each and every week, and to all of our moderators. Guys, thank you for patching us through at live events where we had no internet feed through the years. You guys have been a great support crew for us and for the show. Your call-ins are welcome, 347-202-0316. That's 347-202-0316. As well, feel free to jump into the LiveParanormal.com chat room. It only takes a second to get an avatar, and you're part of the LiveParanormal.com family in that chat room. If you have any questions for our guests today, too, make sure that they're all caps, so that we can distinguish your questions from the other conversations in the chat room, too, as well. Hope everyone is keeping safe. Today, we welcome renowned Ghost Adventures writer, GhostVillage.com founder, 30-odd minutes host, New England Legends producer, televised historian, adventurer, legend tripper, ghost hunter, best-selling author, lecturer, broadcaster, Jeff Belanger. He's coming on the show today in just a few minutes. So to play along, everyone visit jeffbelanger.com, 30oddminutes.com, Facebook Exploring Legends, Twitter and Instagram at the Jeff Belanger, at Exploring Legends, and YouTube subscribe Jeff Belanger. Next week we have coming up Netflix televised psychic intuitive, remote viewer, returning to the program, Al Taus as well. Feel free to call in during his show too for a free on-air live psychic readings and remote views too. He's done on the program before too. So that's going to be the 26th next Saturday. You don't want to miss any of these upcoming broadcasts. A great lineup for October as well. People are securing their dates. And so for all of the Halloween festivities to be kicked off, we have a great lineup ahead. So like the Ghost Host Sophia Temporelli on Facebook, her fan page, to learn about the guests as we learn of them real time as well. Like liveparanormal.com Facebook group page. A lot of great new paranormal investigative team member panel roundups on the weekends. Check out the membership packages for Live Paranormal. They start as low as $2.99 a month. Rob Sarek, the site founder, he's great at rewarding the audience. So a lot of autograph books by some of your favorite paranormal authors, lithos, DVDs, they're offered on the membership page, and he's great at rewarding everyone. So that's a big hint. Support the vendors here on Live Paranormal. So if you're getting Grandma a mail meter for Christmas coming up or anything, make sure you do it through the vendors here on Live Paranormal. And on this very network, starting at 7 p.m. Eastern, Beyond the Screen and Ghost Light Radio, as well as monthly Mondays right here, Chip Coffee of A&E's Paranormal State, Psychic Kids, and now on Kindred Spirits. He's here monthly Mondays on Live Paranormal, as well as Ben Hansen, Amy Goodwin, David M. Roundtree, Stefan Brigati, Andy and Michelle Kopic, Ken Gearhard, and many more on this very network. Archive shows, if you miss anything, need to get a link or anything like that, they're offered as free MP4 iTunes downloads on the homepage of VibeParanormal.com. Let's bring in the host here. Let's see, Sophia. Hey, congratulations. Hello. Sophia. 9 years of broadcasting. You're doing a fantastic job.
Thank you. I can't believe it's been 9 years.
I know. You were 12 years old just sitting there, and Alexandra Halzer was your first guest, and then, you know, you had the Booth Brothers on. Everybody started booking themselves. It's like if you build it, they will come. Great job, Sophia.
Thank you. Yeah, it's been a fun 9 years.
Yeah, and also, too, we're saddened just this last week of the loss of legendary paranormal researcher Doug Carinet. He really loved you a lot. He did a lot for you in Virginia City events. There were some people that didn't really want you a part of some investigations when you were young, and he really fought for you, and he really supported our family there at those events. So we miss you, Doug.
Definitely. It's a very sad loss, and I hope Doug's family, you know, can, you know, get the help they need during this time. I know that he's in a different state right now, so it's very unfortunate.
Yeah, he was a big supporter of yours. He loved you a lot, and we miss you, Doug. Also, too, you got these Twitters, you got these Instagrams, and all these different things out there. Where can people find you?
I'm on Twitter at Sophia Temporelli with 1L, and Instagram just at Sophia Temporelli.
Yeah, and also another person too, great friend of the family, love him a lot too, and big support, you know, for our family too as well at different events. He's our guest today. Tell us about our guest, Sophia.
Today we welcome renowned Ghost Adventures writer, GhostVillage.com founder, 30 Odd Minutes host, New England Legends producer, televised historian, adventurer, ghost hunter, best-selling author, lecturer, broadcaster, Jeff Belanger. Onto the show. Everyone visit JeffBelanger.com, Facebook, Exploring Legends, Twitter, Instagram, at The Jeff Belanger, at Exploring Legends, and YouTube, Jeff Belanger. Let's welcome him into the show.
Yeah, and also, too, for Peter James, too. I mean, he did Peter's last interview for GhostVillage.com.
Come through. Speak to me.
Okay, thank you, Peter. Let's see. I'm trying to untoggle the mute. There we go. Jeff, thanks for coming on.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Hey, yeah, thank you so much for coming on today. It's been great seeing all the work you've done, so I'm very excited to interview you today.
Yeah, this will be fun. Good to talk to you. It's been a while.
Yeah, it has been a while. But during the time in between since last time we've talked, you've done so much. To start off, I know recently you were a part of a couple Dark Zone events. Can you tell us a little bit about your involvement in them and just, you know, how you kind of got involved?
Yeah, so Dark Zone did a live, I think it was a week-long thing from the Conjuring House, as kind of like one of these byproducts of quarantine. You know, we're all locked inside, we can't go to events, we can't investigate. So I thought it was a pretty cool idea to say, well, let's just wire up this house and let people watch, and then we'll bring in various people to talk about it. And so that place is special to me. Number one, I only live like 30 minutes away from it, so I've been there several times now. We filmed Ghost Adventures there for the Halloween special, of course. And the strangest thing about that story, that movie, that house, is that I know every single person involved personally. Like, it was so weird to watch the Conjuring movie and be like, oh, Ed and Lorraine Warren, I grew up with them. I grew up in the town next to them, so I knew them since I was 12. And, oh, the Perrin family, I know all of them. You know, I mean, I didn't know Carolyn, but I know Andrea and her dad and met her sisters, and I've interviewed Andrea, know Andrea. I knew the owner that owned the house before the current owner. You know, she came to see some of my talks.
Yeah.
And so, like, it was just – and then when Corey bought it with his wife, like, the first night in the house, he's like, hey, man, we just bought the Conjuring house. He's like, you want to come over? I said, well, yeah, I do. So it was really – it was wild to just be like, all right, I feel like I've seen this house from every possible angle. So that was how I got involved with that. They interviewed me. It was weird. I sort of interviewed Corey and Jennifer as part of the thing. And then the Lizzie Borden house is another haunt that I've known – a long, long time, and so that one was more recently, and they had me come on and talk a little bit about the history and talk about the paranormal part of it, and that's just such a fun place for me too. And that was only like an hour from where I live, so one of those places you know well. So yeah, it was cool to be part of it.
Yeah, it's amazing, you know, hearing all the backstory coming from you. I know you've done the history for Ghost Adventures for many years, and how do you go about accurate information on locations? What's that like for you, and how long does it usually take for you to actually be able to find all of this information that you have?
Yeah, so first of all, I mean, TV is very limiting, right? We can only give so much information because it's a super short amount of time to tell you what's most important. And the thing about research is that you're never actually done. You know, I mean, if you wanted to spend like 5 years looking into the Conjuring House, you could. You could fill all those days, you know, just looking for every little nugget you could, and land ownership and journals and letters, everything, right? So you'll never know everything. And at some point, you just kind of have to come to grips with that. But as soon as I know where we're going for a Ghost Adventures location, I just start digging in. And one of the easiest things that I do is that every person I talk to, I mean, I talk to the owner of the location always, you know, you start there. Mm-hmm. And the question I ask every single person I talk to is, who else should I talk to? You know, who, and like, oh, you know what, there's this guy I know at the Historical Commission that was really helpful. What's his name? Great, I'll call him, right? And then you just spider web from there, and then you call the Historical Society. Who else should I talk to? Oh, there's this reporter who's got this file. Great. And then you talk to that person. We search newspaper archives. We look for the address, the owners. We do title searches on the locations, and we find out former owners' names, and then we search newspaper archives for those names. And we just search for everything we possibly can so that we know what happened. You know, what's just a legend, and sometimes it is just a legend and we can't prove it or disprove it. And, you know, I always tell the guys that in the notes, like, hey, this is a story that's gone around. I, you know, can't verify or deny. But sometimes we say, like, hey, they talked about there was a murder here and we found it. Here's an old newspaper clip. Here's the details of what happened. And so I just want – I want the guys armed with as much information as possible before they start.
Absolutely. And for people who are wanting to kind of get more into the historical side of the paranormal, what would be your best advice? I know when there's places like haunted canyons and stuff, it's sometimes hard to actually get records, and some information can get muddied. So how do you feel is the best way to find the most accurate information possible?
Yeah, so, I mean, I think you have to just be honest and objective with yourself. I mean, I started as a newspaper reporter. That's how I got into the paranormal, was writing for newspapers. And, you know, I always just try to bring this objectivity to it. There's things we know for sure, and there's things that we speculate, and there's things that are rumors. And you just sort of, like, lay them out in categories, you know. So, like, if it was a canyon, for example, I would look at, you know, and I do this too with Ghost Adventures. I look at everything. Like, are there any fault lines nearby? Is there water sources? Mm-hmm. Like, who lived on that land? Who lived in that canyon? You know, let me go back thousands of years if I can, right? I mean, because any location is the sum total of all of its history, not just as long as the building stood, but everything that happened in and around that area for as long as there's been human activity. So I want to know who used to live there. If there's eyewitnesses, I want to talk to them. And if they said, oh, yeah, I saw this wispy white apparition just moving down a trail, I should take note of that. And that's one of those things where, like, hey, unless I was there with you, I can't say for certain it happened. But here's a witness saying they saw this thing. And so you just gather as much information as you can, and you sort of, like, lay it out there. Sometimes we're just not going to know. We're not going to be able to have some conclusive thing to say, you know, this verifies anything. But we can be as thorough as we can possibly be. And it's something that I think is missing from a lot of paranormal teams out there. They say they do research, but they really don't. You know, they Zillow Google an address and think, like, oh, it was built in 1965. There, I did the history. I'm like, yeah, that's just one little thing, you know. That's one piece, right? So yeah, there's a lot to it.
Yeah, for sure. I was trying to do an investigation with my friend once, and it was in a canyon. That's why I brought it up.
Yeah.
And we were finding stuff on the internet, but then when we talked to a couple investigators who had been there before, after we did the investigation, they said everything we read was wrong, and that none of that happened here. And here's what happened there. And I was like, oh, okay, yeah, it's a little bit more difficult than the internet. I was like 17 at the time, and I've been in the field a long time, but, you know, as a young person, the internet's probably your favorite place you're going to want to go.
Well, sure, but it's a fine place to start, right? I mean, so, like, whatever, Wikipedia, it's okay. It's okay to start there, and I can't stress enough start, right, not finish. So, if you know, like, sometimes stuff you see is like, oh, in this canyon, like, it's the example I use too much, but I can't help it. Like, you know, a school bus full of nuns catches on fire and they all died. And you go, huh, like, that's something we would just know. You know what I mean? Like, that's on the scale of, like, you know, like, school shootings and, like, major catastrophes and building bombings and stuff like that. You would just know that. And so it's not something they keep out of the papers or the media when stuff like that happens.
Mm-hmm.
So if you see something that sounds weird, and by the way, I can't stress enough, this is triply true for all the stuff that posts on Facebook. When you see, like, all these political memes, whichever party you are for or against, right? When you see, like, oh, you know, the best one was Hillary Clinton was running, like, this sex ring out of a pizza place. Come on, right? Like, just think about it. Use your brain for just a minute and say, well, wait, is that logical? And if it doesn't sound logical, look for another source, you know? And if you find information anywhere about anything, like, can you find it in more than one place? And I mean, like, real sources. Because what can happen, too, is that sometimes, like, paranormal groups will just repeat the same stuff they saw on other websites. And so it's the same story that's just getting repeated without any sort of source. So what's the source? Is it, like, a real book? Is it historic documents? Is it town hall records? You know, that's the kind of stuff that's just more interesting. So if something sounds like, whoa, it's crazy, this horrible thing happened here, but it wasn't in the paper, well, yeah, it should have been in the paper. It should have been somewhere. So look for multiple sources and don't finish with the internet, but it's fine to start there.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I learned that after just hearing the different accounts afterwards. My friend and I were just kind of hanging out, so it was more informal, but then after looking back, I was like, oh, wow, there are much better ways to do that, and I just have to figure out how. But I know you said you started your interest in the paranormal as a reporter. What about that job kind of led you into this kind of crazy field, and did you have any experiences when you were younger that also kind of helped aid that interest?
Yeah, sure. So when I was a kid growing up in this small Connecticut town, you know, like, I had friends that said their houses were haunted.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, my buddy's house at the end of our street was built in 1760. I mean, it was older than the United States. When that house was built, we were England, right? Like, and it's a cool house. Like, you know, it had been added on to a lot, but like when you go to the oldest part, you're like, oh wow. And so it was just one of those things where you're just like, oh, I mean, it wasn't like some creepy horror movie. It was just so matter of fact. And then knowing Ed and Lorraine Warren since I was 12 and seeing their programs, you know, their lectures and stuff. And I mean, that was certainly an inspiration. But when I started to be a writer, and I knew I wanted to write, and I liked features. I was never like a hard news guy. I liked feature stories. And, you know, around October, you just go looking for ghost stories. And so I was no different. And I interviewed Ed and Lorraine one Halloween. And, you know, you go to local haunts. And I was like, this is so cool. I love, like, digging into the history of the place. But then interviewing people who said, like, yeah, I was here and I saw a ghost. And I went, whoa, that's crazy, right? And you interview multiple people who report the same thing. And just as a reporter, you go, wow, this, I would have to conclude that these multiple different people saw the same thing. Like, shoot, I mean, if I'm being objective, this place sounds haunted, you know, and it sort of grew from there. And then this was like the mid-90s, by the way. So our newspaper had an early website, and those pages that I wrote, the paranormal stuff, was getting like 10 times the traffic of everything else. And so when the paper went out of business, I said, well, shoot, I'll start my own website. So I started ghostvillage.com in 1999. We can legally drink this year, 21 years.
Yeah, so, that year is born.
I know. Like, yeah, 1999, Ghost Village started. And yeah, I mean, it's in 21 years. That's a long time on the Internet. Congratulations for catching up to your fake ID, too, by the way, Sophia. That's good. Well done.
Yeah, it's really great that you started all the way back then, you know, really at the beginning of the Internet. It's good because you do really get the facts out there. It's good that when people were first starting to research the paranormal, they would be able to find your website and kind of see the historical aspect of it, because that is largely the paranormal. What happened there to either leave a residual haunting or an intelligent haunting? Did someone die there? Was it something that happened repetitively over time? And it's always good to just have that information beforehand, because some things can be easily explained, but unless you have something to verify, it's kind of hard to tell.
Well, one of the funny things that happens is that, you know, so folklore and legend, right, where you have an experience about something and you tell the story to someone else and they hear it and they tell it to someone else, that still, it works the same way it worked 1,000 years ago, the way it worked 100 years ago. It hasn't changed, but the Internet has sped that process up to, like, light speed, literally light speed, right? What used to take years and decades can now take hours and, like, a day or two. And so one of the things that happens is, and I know there's some paranormal groups that say, like, well, we like to go in and not know anything. We just want to go in and see what we feel and experience. One of the things I found at haunts, which is really interesting, is that when we take some people into a haunted location, like Lizzie Borden House, for example, you know, a place where, I mean, I know the history pretty well. I mean, I've really pretty thoroughly read through it and understand what happened. I know where it happened, all that stuff. When, and you go in there and someone starts having a paranormal experience, and they're having an experience that isn't related to anyone who's ever been in the house, right? This happens quite a bit, right? So the folks are saying, oh my gosh, like there's this old lady coming through, right? And you go, okay, old lady, well, Abby Borden wasn't that old, you know? And suddenly you realize, like, I think it's my grandmother. And you go, your grandmother? Like, oh, was she ever here in Fall River, Massachusetts, or in this house? And she goes, no, she's West Coast. And while I don't think that person's lying at all, I think what happened is that person went into a place that they've heard is haunted. They are now a little more open to this psychic experience, and now stuff's coming through that's probably around them all the time. And when you don't know what's from what, when you haven't done the research, suddenly you know, her grandma could become part of the Lizzie Borden story if you're not careful. And that's just not accurate. It's I think it's attached to that person, not to the building. You know what I mean? And so if we're not thorough about how we do these things, then suddenly someone puts on a website that this ghost is there, and then suddenly other people start talking about it, and you're adding things into the story that were never really part of it, and it gets messy. It gets messy and dirty and noisy,
mm-hmm.
and that's tough for me because I try to keep these things as pure as possible. I work meticulously at that because I've seen how especially television shows. Once a TV show says something happened, well, shoot, that becomes the last word for a lot of people, and it's not necessarily so. Or it's that person's experience, which may just be that person's experience and not necessarily tied to the location. And so the story mm-hmm. it's changing all the time. It's really tricky to kind of keep track of these things.
Do you feel that could be a possible explanation for the many Lady in White sightings pretty much at locations across the U.S. and I'm sure out of the country too?
Yeah, well, ladies in White really started in Europe. And they speak mm-hmm. to a lot of different parts of the human experience. So, for example, when you're buried, for the longest time, you were buried in your finest clothes. And for women, that was often their wedding dress. So the ladies in white, quite often were tied to women who had passed away and were mm-hmm. mothers and sisters and wives and all that other stuff. But they also seem to have a narrative that follows where there's like this unfinished business, right? Like who was the lady in white? Like, why is she restless? Why is she wandering? I can think of one in Connecticut where she's always seen up and down a road. So this phantom hitchhiker narrative gets involved with it. And mm-hmm. so where is she going or trying to go? And then we can't help but want to answer those questions. It's human nature to like solve those mysteries. And so, I mean, a part of it is once it becomes a thing, then they start showing up elsewhere. Right, so they're all over Europe. Europeans came to New England, ladies in white, gray ladies, green ladies, even blue ladies. Right, they're I've heard them all.
Yeah.
They're reported all over New England. They're reported all over the country. They spread. They come with us. I really think with a lot of these ghosts and spirits, I truly believe we summon them, in a way. The reason some of these haunts have the same spirits coming up again and again, it's because we go in looking for them. We go in as investigators saying, I wonder if I'll connect with Andrew Borden at the Borden House. He was murdered here. I wonder if I'll connect with his spirit. And you're thinking about him. And in a way, you're kind of conjuring him up, connecting to him or trying to connect to him. And I think we have so much to do with why these haunts go on.
Absolutely. When you are reaching out to the spirit, they are, of course, going to want to connect with you because they are dead. So to get a point across is really, I think, important to them, whether it's just talking about what's happening today or just having someone to talk to. We don't know if it's isolating on the other side, if they're able to communicate. So being able to communicate with the living, I'm sure, in any way is very important to them.
Well, yeah, and I think, too, that the idea of like a spirit being at rest, I don't think that happens until
mm-hmm.
sadly they're forgotten, right? Until there's no connection left. Until when we tear down these buildings, that's such a huge part of the connection to the people that live there. That once you get rid of it, we're literally wiping the building from visual, from that visual space, but we're also wiping it from our mental space. And then we forget. And once we forget, we let it go. And when we let it go, it suddenly isn't haunted anymore. Like these things just sort of move on. I think you can't say enough about the role that living people play in these haunts.
Absolutely. And speaking of, keeping memories alive, what is it like for you to see someone you grew up with, like Ed and Lorraine Warren, their image really being put out there through movies and the recent Travel Channel documentary, Devil's Road, just to see their legacy kind of live on?
Yeah, it's pretty cool. Well, the movies are so highly fictionalized that,
mm-hmm.
I mean, there's not much resemblance to their work. Well, I mean, it's a little bit, but I thought they did a great job with the Devil's Road documentary. It was cool. So I had interviewed Ed Warren multiple times, but I did like a lengthy interview with him in the mid-90s. And a lot of that audio you heard in that documentary was my audio. Like, that was my cassette tape that I had in my basement for all these years, you know. And when they were gathering stuff for it, and I said, oh, man, I got this and I got that. And they played it and like, oh, man, we want to use a bunch of this. And it was cool to talk about them because they went at this work from a highly religious perspective, specifically Roman Catholic perspective, right? Mm-hmm. And I always thought that, I mean, I didn't necessarily agree with the way that they did all their investigating, but I understand where they were coming from. I was also raised Catholic. So for Ed Warren, it was like, no, this is a demon. We need an exorcism. I need to involve the church. We got to get a priest. And I think that he viewed himself as like this spiritual warrior, you know, that he was fighting mm-hmm. evil and exposing it and promoting it. Promoting it in a way as like this cautionary tale that this is real and we got to warn others. I disagreed with a lot of things they did, you know, but I also respect the fact that they were sort of pioneers. They were out there being the face of this when very few others were, right? I mean, Hans Holzer was out there doing it too, but there's just so few there were so few people back in the 70s and 80s that were willing to say, I look for ghosts, right? I don't care if you laugh at me. I do this. This is what I do. And that, you know, and in a huge way, they led the way for so many of us.
Definitely. It's great to see, you know, even though The Conjuring is highly fictionalized, it just really got their name out to the public, and I think brings a lot of awareness to the paranormal field and the paranormal field from the past, the one that they may not see today on shows like Ghost Adventures, and just kind of the difference in a time before technology was so available.
Yeah, so what? On the one hand, you know, we live in a time that's so different from when they were doing their thing, right? Every one of mm-hmm. us has a camera and an audio recorder on us 24/7. You know, there's so much more stuff out there now. Some of it is really compelling. Some of it, I think, is fake. And it just creates for all this, like, this noise, you know, that we have to sift through. Back then, you know, if you thought your house was haunted, today you just go on Google and there's like 37 paranormal groups within 10 miles of you, right? You just go like paranormal yeah. research groups near me and you go, oh my God, there's five. How do I pick from these five? You know, and back then you watched television or you read books or you went to the library and you went, oh, there's Hans Holzer, mm-hmm. there's Ed and Lorraine Warren, there's Brad Steiger. You know, it's like there's just a small group of people that are like publicly doing this. And to be fair, there were some research groups at local colleges and things like that if you knew to call them. So it was so different. Like, you had to really reach out. And today, the paranormal has become so much a part of popular culture that it's mixed up now, right? It's I know a group in Colorado. They told me how you know, they had mm-hmm. done their due diligence. They had the priests pre-interviews on the phone calls, you know, like, okay, what's going on and what's the history of it, and okay, all right, we're going to come out. We'll come out this Saturday. And they get out there and there's basically a cocktail party going on at the house. And they're like, what's going on here? Like, you know, we thought we were coming out to investigate. Did we get the dates wrong or something? And they're like, no, we invited all our friends over to watch. And they're like, oh, my God, we are not the entertainment. You know, like, how are we going to investigate with you guys clinking glasses and drinking and eating and, you know, and I'm like, boy, that sort of sums up where we are right now, doesn't it? You know, like,
yeah,
we could have watched Ghost Adventures on the Travel Channel or invite you guys over. So we opted for that. You're like, no, just
yeah.
watch the show if you're going to have drinks and stuff. But that's where we're at.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I haven't heard a story like that. But I guess with movies like, you know, Ghostbusters and you have Stranger Things, people
yeah.
see fictionalized supernatural, even if it's with monsters and stuff, and think, oh, this would be really cool. I'll just invite my friends over.
Yeah, no, it's fun. And by the way, like, you know, it's always mm-hmm. been part of popular culture. There have been ghost movies going back to, like, you know, since they made movies. Like, that was part of it. And of course, I mean, Ghostbusters, what a movie. What a great movie. I loved it. And I think that a lot of that stuff, I mean, any paranormal investigator who's above a certain age who says Ghostbusters didn't have some sort of influence on them is lying, right? I mean, of course it did. You were just like, oh, my – I mean, it was goofy and funny, but it still looks so damn cool. And I think that drives fiction has always driven us, right? I mean, how many NASA scientists grew up watching Star Trek, right? I mean, a ton that were like, oh my God, that looks so crazy, but I wonder if I could actually build something like that, you know? And if we don't have the dreamers, if we don't have the fictional stuff, then those dreamers are what push the people doing the real work. And so whether it was Ghostbusters or some other fictional story, it has people asking questions like, okay, if this stuff is really real, how can I capture it or at least document it? If I can't put it in a jar, can I get it with night vision? Can I get it with some kind of, you know, spectrometer? Mm-hmm. Can I get it with EMF? You know, can I document it to the point where it's repeatable? And those are cool questions to ask, right? I mean, that's good. Like you're thinking, how can I do this? How can I really prove this thing that's been in all these movies and people have talked about around campfires for thousands of years? And I think that's awesome.
Absolutely. And I know we have to take a quick commercial break, but we'll be right back with more questions.
It's the Ghost Host Show with Sophia Temporelli on LiveParanormal.com. This hour is flying by our guest, Jeff Belanger, on the show with the Ghost Host, Sophia Temporelli. So feel free to play along. JeffBelanger.com, visit that right now, as well as he has up to 30oddminutes.com, Facebook, Exploring Legends, Twitter, and Instagram at the Jeff Belanger. At Exploring Legends and YouTube, subscribe Jeff Belanger. It's the Ghost Host Show with Sophia Temporelli on LiveParanormal.com. We'll be right back.
Hi, this is Dustin Perry, the paranormal rock star, and you're listening to The Ghost Host with the most, Sophia Temporelli, only on LiveParanormal.com.
For joining us on History FM Radio on LiveParanormal.com and History.fm. From paranormal to the unexplained history, it all happens here. Looking to enhance your radio experience? Participate in live interactive chat 24/7 with our radio show hosts and other like-minded people on www.liveparanormal.com, the only interactive social chat room supported by full interactive media. Stop by now and join in on the fun.
Zach Bagans from Ghost Adventures, and you are listening to the Ghost Host, Sophia Temporelli, on LiveParanormal.com.
Not only am I Dave Schrader, but I'm Dave Schrader of Travel Channel's The Holzer Files, and you're listening to Ghost Host Sophia Temporelli on LiveParanormal.com. I feel left out. I wanted to throw myself into your mix of voiceovers now.
I love it, you know? It's almost like we didn't leave break.
I'm having a little hard time trying to unmute everybody right now. There we go. They're starting to untoggle now. But just in the interim, let me ask Jeff. I know on Ghost Adventures there was some tragic events with an EVP specialist, and I know the Queen Mary, some other locations, Travel Channel shelved some of those episodes.
Yeah.
Now, if they have any plans to reinvestigate or revamp or kind of redo some of those locations?
Way above my pay grade. Yeah, I don't know. No, I don't know. I have no idea what. I have no idea if they're gonna dust them off again and play them again after enough time has passed, or if they're gonna redo them. I tell people I only know where the next one is, because like
right.
that's my biggest priority is always the next shoot, not the one that was, not the one that just aired or aired years ago. It's the next one, because that's what I gotta focus on.
Right. We got Sophia. She's back in now too.
Cool. Yeah. No, I don't. Yeah. I don't know. I don't know what the plans are at all. I stopped asking long ago.
Well, I was fortunate enough to be a part of that episode.
Yeah. Right.
I know that you were a historian on the show for many years. So I'm sure you did the research for that episode too.
Yep.
Do you remember anything that you researched from the ship? Any backstory that you could give to the audience?
Oh my gosh! So the Queen Mary. There's so much to say about the Queen Mary. It was in my first book, World's Most Haunted Places. I did a chapter on it, and I've been to the Queen Mary, you know, a bunch of times over the years. It's an amazing place because when you walk onto the Queen Mary, as you know, it looks like it did in the 1930s, right? It's you sort of feel like you're stepping into another time, and I do believe that is also part of the experience. And while you say, like, well, why would a transatlantic ocean liner be haunted? Well, it was also a troop ship during World War II. Mm-hmm. It was painted gray, and this ship that was meant to hold, I believe it was 3,000 passengers and crew comfortably, had, you know, I think it was 13,000 or 14,000 people at once. It was triple or quadruple the amount of people. Soldiers had to take turns just standing on deck as it was a troop ship. And because it's a cruiser, right, it's just all it could do was sail these zigzag patterns to avoid the German U-boats. And at one point, the Sirocco, which is a ship that was a much smaller armed ship that was sailing along as an escort, got in its path, and the Queen Mary cut the Sirocco in half, sank it, and the worst part was the Queen Mary couldn't even stop to pick up the survivors. So many perished. It's just there's so many tragedies around this ship. Based, you know, not just on World War II, but then there were accidents. There was, you know, I believe one of the crew members was cut in half by one of the doors that had to shut down in the engine room, which is meant to seal the ship in case of a flood. And there's just so many stories that come out of that ship over the years. It's just, you know, from prisoners of war being on there to, you know, the regular tragedies that can happen from heart attacks or dying of natural causes. It's just this powerful place. And it looks the part. You know, you walk through those old halls, you go up to the observation bar, you go down in the engine room, and you sort of feel it, you know, this metal ship. It's almost like it's recorded almost a century of history all around you. And it's a powerful place. It really is. It's an incredible place to see. I think they're shut down right now, right, because of COVID. Is that still the case? Yeah. Which is tragic. And the other part of it, too, is that if that place is special to you, and I know Peter James, of course, like that's, that's how I got to know Peter, was because of the Queen Mary. And it's one of those, I mean, it's not going to be there forever. It can't, right? That metal's going to fatigue to a certain point, and they're going to have to just, like, take the whole thing away at one point. So it's something that's just not going to be there forever. We have to see it while we can.
Yeah, it's an amazing ship. And with all the research you've done, why, in your personal opinion, do you think that the Floridia is so active and so haunted?
Two reasons. One is that we expect it to be. And this is, again, me going back to that whole, like, I think we summon them. You know, when we go in and we go, ooh, this is the pool area. Now, three reasons. Let me make it three reasons. One, we have that expectation because we've heard so many stories about the pool area. Two, it's dusty and dirty and creepy looking, right? If it was all clean and polished and full of water and had, like, you know, people sip at Mai Tais by the side of the pool, you wouldn't be as freaked out. But it looks off, right? It's empty, it's dust, and so it's got the look. And thirdly, I think something's there, right? Something's there, and people go looking for it. I mean, I've seen some weird videos come out of there. I know the stories Peter James used to tell of Jackie, you know, connecting with the spirit of Jackie. And no matter what you uncover, that has become such a hot spot for the ship. And so it sort of continues to be. You know, it looks the part. It's got the backstory. It's got multiple witnesses talking about things happening there. And so when you go there, I think maybe you're a little more freaked out than you are if you're up in, say, the observation bar having a cocktail. It's just a different experience.
Yeah, it's a really creepy room. When I investigated there with Ghost Adventures, I have never felt it so active as when the lights were out. It was really crazy. I don't know if you heard any of the unaired evidence from there, but the EVPs we caught they were so clear. I think they couldn't air them because of some of the language used in them.
Yeah, that is a bummer when people are dropping F-bombs and stuff. Like, you gotta beep them.
It was the ghost.
Yeah, no, I know. Yeah, it doesn't matter who said it. You still gotta beep it.
It was crazy, though.
No, I know. Yeah, I know, I know. I didn't get to hear the evidence that didn't air, but I know they were pretty thrilled with that location because it's so iconic, right? It, when you think about haunted places across the United States, like you gotta that's a place that just comes up a lot. You know, everybody knows it, and it was in the beginning of Ghost Adventures. I remember Zach being like, "No, we're not going to do the Queen Mary. It's just played out. Everyone else did it," and I get that. I totally get that and respect that and appreciate that.
Yeah, of course.
But at some point, even Zach realized, like, "Hey, man, people want to see Ghost Adventures do the Queen Mary. I know everyone else has done it, but no one's seen you guys do it." And so I think that had a lot to do with the decision. Like, it's funny. It must be like a band, right? You got to play the hits. You know, like, here's a song from our new album. Boo. Okay, here's the big hit from 10 years ago. Yay. You know, and it's it's sort of like that. So the Queen Mary is one of those places. At some point, I mean, if you really love this stuff, if you love American haunts, you kind of have to go there.
Yeah, it's an amazing location with so much history, and I have heard clear EVPs before, but nothing like that. So that was really amazing.
When was the last time you were there?
Well, pre-pandemic, I can't exactly remember when. But yeah, it's just amazing ship. I think I was there last time with my friend. We were investigating it. And the Mel meters were going off a bunch. It was really strange. But we weren't doing a formal investigation. So, you know, just kind of walking through the self-guided tour and hanging out.
Sure. Yeah, sometimes it's the best part, right? Like just being on those things and suddenly, you know, you have something weird happen. I get it.
Yeah, absolutely. And with all the history that you've learned throughout the years and locations you've been to, what is the most interesting experience you've had on an investigation and the coolest piece of history that you've learned or the weirdest?
God, I don't – oh, my God, I don't know. Like, that's a hard one. because I try to – I mean, I that's what gets me excited when I can find, like, a nugget that not everyone knows about, you know, at a location where you go, like, oh, man, this is – there's a whole angle on this that nobody really uncovered. I think one of the things that got me excited – so at the Lizzie Borden house – when I found this tiny little newspaper article, I mean, tiny, that goes back to 1892, right? And it had talked about how one reporter had speculated, like, wow, maybe there's a dark cloud hanging over this property because this is not the first murder on this, like, general property. And I'm like, what? Right? I mean, this is not a big house. And then I learned that not only was Andrew and Abby Borden not the first two people murdered on the property, they weren't even the first two Bordens murdered on the property. 45 years earlier, Andrew's uncle lived in the house right next door, and his wife snapped one day, tried to drown three of their children in an outdoor cistern right on the property, and succeeded in killing two of them, and then slit her own throat. Succeeded in killing herself. The oldest child survived the attempted drowning. So three Bordens murdered 45 years earlier, right pretty much like feet from where Andrew and Abby were murdered, right? Just in the property right next door.
Mm-hmm.
And you go, whoa, like that's crazy. Like, and they were relatives, you know? So that was one of those nuggets that was like, oh my God, like just sort of like groundbreaking. Like the story's, it was already big, and then you find out it's a little bit bigger, and I love that. When I find stuff like that, you because then you do start to wonder, like, maybe there is some sort of like black cloud hanging over this property, because it's bigger than just that one thing. And as far as like weirdest, like, I don't know. I mean, I think when you start talking to people, and one of the other things I love is when someone's like, oh yeah, I heard, like, you know, this crazy thing happened. This guy went and flipped upside down and blah, blah, blah. And you go, okay, yeah, whatever. You're just messing with me, you know? And then you find the person who goes, no, I was flipped upside down. And you go, really? You know, so suddenly, and that's where, like, you follow the lead, right? You follow the legend. Even if it sounds crazy, you don't necessarily dismiss it. Here's an example. I was working on a story about this spooky cemetery in Massachusetts called Spider Gates. And some kid emailed me, I'm going to say literally like, I don't know, 2002 or something, when you were probably just getting out of diapers. And and the email said, "Hey, my buddy and I were like, you know, we're 13 years old, and we were out at Spider Gates, and we saw these guys in robes holding candles and chanting this little cemetery. And this little cemetery is out in the woods. There's no roads around it anymore. It's just this old creepy cemetery called Spider Gates because the gates look like spiders." And I was like, "Oh my!" I just deleted it. I'm like, "You're lying. You're full of it." Years later, I'm interviewing a local historian who's also a retired police officer in town. And we're walking through Spider Gates, and I'm going through all these crazy legends associated with the place. And we were done. And I'm like, "Oh, you know what? I should just ask. I don't want to be silly. But I got this email a long time ago. I don't even mean to waste your time, but these robed figures holding candles and chanting." And the guy goes, "Oh, yeah. I've chased him out of here more than once." What? Right? You just stop cold. Like,
yeah.
Are you kidding me? He goes, "Nope. They come down here at night. They're holding candles. They're wearing robes. And they're visiting the grave of Ralph Earle, who's one of the guys buried there from, like, the 1800s. They belong to a club on Worcester Polytechnic Institute, which is a college not too far away. And it's part of, like, one of their secret initiation rituals is to go there at night. They don't have the right to be there. They're not allowed to be there by law. And the cops do come, and the cops chase them out of there." But all I could think of is, imagine you're 13 years old. You're with a friend, and you're sneaking around the cemetery, which I did too. I did that. That would have been me. Like, this is totally me at 13, right? Like, sneaking through the cemetery at night. And you really do see people in robes holding candles and chanting. And you're thinking, this is it. This is the night I die, right? Like, there's no way we survive this. They're going to see us, catch us, and we're going to be part of a human sacrifice. We're dead. And I wish I could go back. If you guys are listening from all those years ago, I'm sorry I deleted the email. I'm so sorry I didn't believe you. Because I didn't know. But yeah, something like that. You're like, man, that the world is a weird, weird place. And it's caused me to, like, rethink the emails I get from now on and be like, maybe I'll save it. I don't necessarily believe you or I'm going to jump right on that one, but I'm not going to delete it.
Yeah, that would be freaky, but at least there is somewhat of a logical explanation that it's like a fraternity, you know, kind of hazing instead of some cult or something. So it's a little bit different than what it would initially appear to be.
Yeah, but it's enough to keep the story around. And that's a powerful thing, you know. And the other thing, too, is that, you know, when we tell these stories, that to me, that's my favorite part, where we share this stuff. We share the weird, and we go, you know, we're not talking about politics, thank God, or, like, religion or the weather or sports. We're talking about stuff that has much bigger meaning. You know, when we talk about a place being haunted, what we're really talking about is the potential of life after death and what happens, what comes next. What's going to happen to me when I die? Who will I haunt? You know, these are really big questions, and we can dismiss them. Oh, they're just ghost stories. Ha 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 ha. And that's fine. If that lets you sleep at night, I won't stop you. But for a lot of us, it's bigger than that, right? This is something that's a reality for a lot of us, and we want to understand it better. So, you know, I get it.
For sure. And I know we're coming towards the end of the show, but are there any websites, upcoming interviews, or events that you would like to mention?
So I do a story tour every fall, and I've been doing this for years and years. This year, it's all virtual. I've got literally 40 dates between now and December, and many of them are free. They're sponsored by different organizations like libraries and colleges and universities. And if you go to my website, jeffbelanger.com, and just click on my gigs, you can see I do different stories all the time, and I'm always changing it up. So through Zoom, you can go and attend. And it's my favorite thing to do is to share these stories and share the history and the legends and sometimes the evidence. So that's coming up, and I'm psyched to be doing that again this year.
Well, it sounds great, and I want to thank you so much for coming on today. It's been great talking to you, and I would love to have you back on in the future.
Yeah, sure. I know, again, love talking about this stuff, love the stories, and so cool you've been doing this since you were just a whippersnapper. I mean, that's cool that you're still doing your show, and congratulations.
Well, thank you so much, and yeah, congratulations on all your success throughout the years. It's been great seeing everything you've done, and I did see your story about the Lizzie Borden house live, and I was shocked that there was another murder. I mean, not just that there was another murder, but another family member. So the fact you were able to find that small article is incredible.
Yeah, there's so much to learn out there. I mean, it's, you know, I think the other thing, too, is, you know, history does tend to repeat. And so mm-hmm. if we have an understanding and appreciation of it, maybe we can avoid some of those mistakes in the future.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much, Jeff.
Thank you, Sophia.
Oh, Jeff, quickly, I want to say, too, yeah, you're welcome anytime if you have anything to promote. And I know she had a lot more questions for even upcoming season. But you have on Amazon's music new platform, you have New England Legends podcast is there within the last few days. Also, too, New England Legends app has been released.
Yeah.
And you have the 2021 Haunted New England calendar that you did with Frank Grace Photography. Tell us about that quickly and
yeah.
when those are being released. I know
pre-orders. Yeah, so I've been doing my podcast, New England Legends, for like the last 3 years. They're short. They're like 12 minutes each. They're produced sound effects and music and voice actors. Just weird stories from New England. A lot of ghosts, a lot of monsters, UFOs, aliens, like all paranormal stuff. And that's been so fun to like build a community. And so the app not only gives you access to all the podcast episodes all for free, but also gives you directions to where these locations are so you can check them out for yourself. And then the calendar, I've been doing that for 7 years in a row with Frank Grace. And, yeah, the Haunted 2021 New England calendar, we only print a limited edition because when they're gone, they're gone. Because come January 1st, you can't sell a calendar. So this year's calendar is just out now for pre-sale, and then they'll be shipping out the first week of October. So, yeah, there's always something going on.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
Yeah,
thank
congratulations.
You
thank you so much, Jeff. Have a great rest of your weekend, by the way.
You too. Take care, guys.
All right. Thanks, Jeff.
Bye.
Wow.
Bye.
Well, great show today, Sophia.
Definitely. Jeff was such a great guest. I want to thank you all for listening. The show definitely would not be possible without all of you, and I will talk to you guys again next week. Bye.
Yeah, also, too, I want to remind everybody, too, next week we have a remote viewer. He's on the next, Netflix televised Psychic Intuitive. Again, remote viewer. He does readings on air live and also remote views locations on air. We've had that happen on the show. Harvey Althaus will be on the program. That's next weekend, the 26th. So you don't want to miss any of these upcoming shows. But again, check out jeffbelanger.com. All the direct links for the limited edition calendar also, too. That everything is on jeffbelanger.com. Facebook, Exploring Legends. Twitter and Instagram at The Jeff Belanger at Exploring Legends. On YouTube, search Jeff Belanger. And again, great show today, Sophia, and we'll see you next week.
Hi, this is Debbie at Xeon Ghost Adventures. You're listening to The Ghost Host with your host, Sophia Temporelli, on liveparanormal.com.
God bless you all.
Thank you for joining us on History FM Radio on liveparanormal.com and history.fm. From paranormal to the unexplained history, it all happens here. Looking to enhance your radio experience? Participate in live interactive chat 24/7 with our radio show hosts and other like-minded people on www.liveparanormal.com, the only interactive social chat room supported by full interactive media. Stop by now and join in on the fun.